From News Talk 580 1059 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Now here's your host, Mark Kepler.
Back in 2012, the California Stewardship Network, an alliance promoting economic vitality, and California Forward, a bipartisan good government reform effort, hosted the first ever California Economic Summit. Over the last 4 years, the summit has worked with regional and state leaders to develop a shared agenda to generate jobs and improve regional competitiveness. What do the unique regions of the state have to do to promote job creation and create a stronger economy for the state as a whole? We'll ask. James Mayer, President and CEO of California Forward. Fred Silva, Senior Fiscal Policy Advisor for California Forward. Matt Leger, Research Analyst with SEIU United Health Workers. Kathy Martin, Vice President of Workforce Policy for the California Hospital Association. And Kathy Creswell, a Housing Policy Specialist with Creswell Consulting.
We'll also hear from Fresno Mayor Ashley Swearingen and Pete Weber, Co-Chair of California Forward and Director of the Fresno Bridge Academy, a 2016 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Award winner.
Additional funding for the Matty Report made possible by a grant from the wonderful company, harvesting health and happiness around the world. From the California Channel at the State Capitol and the Matty Institute, it's the Matty Report with Executive Director of the Matty Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. The California Economic Summit is an attempt to connect regional and state leaders to develop a shared agenda to generate jobs and improve regional competitiveness. One of the founders of that effort is with us today, James Mayer, the President and CEO of Cal Forward, a bipartisan good government reform group. Welcome to the Matty Report.
Happy to be here.
So, Jim, tell us a little bit about the California Economic Summit, the who, what, when, where, why, how. Who's involved? What's the general idea?
We launched this about 5 years ago in this partnership with those regional organizations you mentioned because there was the belief that the state really didn't have a coherent plan to do economic recovery and grow the kind of resilient economies we needed at the community and regional level. And we needed a venue to bring together state, local, regional leaders from public, private, and civic sectors to really figure out what those policy drivers were and then to steadily make progress towards what we wanted in state law and local practice.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seemed like you had silos before, right? The state was doing its thing or the localities were doing its thing. You've kind of done a hybrid approach, it sounds like, with this regional approach.
Absolutely. And what we found was the regions actually had economic strategies, but they hadn't counted on any action from the state. They literally had written off the state as a partner, but yet they need the state. They need the state resources. The state regulations are either helping or hurting them. And this has created a way to both connect what regions were needing to do and candidly gave state leaders a sound way of understanding what regions needed.
Now, I remember when we were doing the California partnership with the San Joaquin Valley. That was one of these kinds of regional efforts, and legislators were going to this partnership and saying, what legislation do you need to help move whatever the agenda was for, whether it's air quality or economic development, what have you. So I assume that you've got some, with the summit, you set up some annual goals. How do you make sure those goals are accomplished?
We do set annual goals, and we base that on the priorities of the regions. And each year, we have work that's underway around workforce and around infrastructure investment. And we work on those goals all year long, and then people come together at the summit each year to assess the progress, to identify what we need to get done in the next year or so, and then to organize and commit to moving those things forward. So there's literally hundreds of people involved in the Economic Summit. It's an event. It's a great event. People want to come. They network. It's exciting. They get to meet people from different regions and at the state. But the real heavy work happens the other 364 right. days of the year.
Yeah. I want to ask you, this has been in existence since 2012. Can you point to some tangible improvements, changes that have come about as a result of the summit?
Absolutely. One of the biggest high priorities in every region is growing their human capital, workforce development, making sure we've got enough people with the skills necessary to fuel their economies and get jobs that are paying enough to help them support their families. And there's been steady progress in identifying things that the state needed to do to grow that CTE pipeline, and we've had a number of bills.
Career technical education,
and this is advanced manufacturing and healthcare and working in the green economy, lots of very tangible jobs. And this last year, in partnership with the California Community College Chancellor's Office, we championed and got through the Strong Workforce Program, which puts not only more money into this, but does it exactly the way the regions wanted. Regional colleges have to cooperate with each other and consult with their employers. The money is going to flow based on need and ability to make a difference in people's
lives. So it's real skills that are attached to real jobs that employers say they need.
And there's a performance and accountability built into this to make sure it actually works.
You know, it's interesting. You look at statistics and you find that, you know, the middle class is shrinking, poverty is growing. There's really no easy fix here, is there? I mean, there's no silver bullet. It's a multitude of things we need to do.
One of the things we're doing in this summit is we've done some analysis about what are all those primary drivers for both persistent poverty or lack of upward mobility. And it's very clear we're going to have to both grow workforce but also grow jobs. And we're going to have to do something about the high cost of living, particularly housing. The mix of those things are different in every region, but every region has to tackle those.
You know, it's a really interesting point about housing that you're making, that when you look at studies, they say that's a big driver for poverty in California because people are spending over a third of their salaries on housing alone. That's a big deal.
And in fact, wages are not going to rise as fast as housing prices, so we're actually going to lose ground against poverty. The summit is the only place where all of those stakeholders that fight about that issue come together to talk about things they can agree on in the context of all the people who are impacted by the answers, the millennial leaders, the employers. The hospital association cares as much about housing as they do workforce. This is what the summit is, the place where people come together to talk about the big solutions.
December 13th and 14th in Sacramento. You know, I want to ask you about the summit. They're really focusing on three issues. They are housing, workforce issues, and water infrastructure. Why those three issues? And I'm wondering, is any one more important than the other? Are they interdependent?
No, they aren't, and they are independent. And
the interdependent, you're
saying. They are interdependent. Mm-hmm. And if you, those three drivers I just referenced are actually represented by those. So workforce is clearly a big issue here. People have to be able to participate in this economy. Housing is the single biggest cost driver to our cost of living. And infrastructure is usually the first thing we look to government do in terms of trying to help create jobs. And so part of this year, so we've always been trying to be big enough to impact the solution, but specific enough to make progress. It's walking that fine line. This year, we're going to look at what we've done and ask ourselves, do we have a broad enough, deep enough agenda that we're advancing fast enough to actually restore upward mobility?
Well, I want to thank James Mayer from California Forward for joining us. Up next, we're going to talk about one of those issues, infrastructure issues generally, and water in particular. This is the Matty Report. Welcome back. Some suggest with some alarm that California's infrastructure is stressed beyond capacity. How does the state do more to invest in things like bridges, roads, airports, rail lines, pipes to maintain our economic competitiveness? Our guest is Fred Silva, Senior Fiscal Policy Advisor with California Forward. Welcome back to the Matty Report.
Thank you, Mark.
So, roads. People say they're crumbling. Water, where is it? Yet there doesn't appear to be a big appetite for spending money to fix these problems. What's the summit's prescription?
Well, you know, the summit has focused on the strength of our economic regions and where the investment should take place. Frankly, the state has been ambivalent about that. Currently, on the November ballot, there are 13 counties that have sales tax increases to invest more in transportation. Half of the state's population will be participating in that discussion. So the state looks at transportation finance as a need to fix it first. They want to repair roads. But the question is, how do we add capacity to our growing economic regions? And for that, the summit has had as a priority to have means to do that, creating 2 years ago something known as a new financing authority known as Enhanced Infrastructure Financing
District. I wanted to ask you about those Enhanced Infrastructure Financing Districts. How do they work?
Well, the whole concept is to take, as I mentioned, a regional approach to transportation needs or water resource needs or other infrastructure needs, to bring counties and cities and special districts together to use their financing capacity to continue investments in their regional economies.
You know, it sounds like a little bit like the self-help transportation taxes that some counties pass, like in Fresno County, for example, Measure C, as a way to kind of give more money for road projects. You know, are you seeing more counties doing that?
Yes, indeed. That's partly because the state has not been interested in putting more money into transportation capacity. They're interested in putting more money into the maintenance of the state highway system. But when it comes to connectivity between the eastern part of Los Angeles and the western part of Los Angeles, they frankly have had limited interest, which is why so much local initiative and local interest is there. What we tried to do with this new financing authority is to bring both counties and cities together in order to capture the growth of their own economies and invest that into infrastructure.
It's also that you can leverage that money. So a lot of times when you go out to get federal or state grants, they want you to match those funds. If you have local funds to match them, then you double the impact.
Exactly. And that's partly why the summit took on that agenda rather than just trying to convince the state to put more money in to get, again, the growth in the local economies to be able to provide that match to state interest if we could get the state to put more resources
in. It sounds a little bit like this is almost like redevelopment agencies 2.0. Is this similar to a redevelopment agency?
Well, it's a bit different. Remember that this happened after the repeal of redevelopment,
right,
where the
right.
The summit,
is this filling that gap?
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason that this got on the agenda of the summit in 2014 is that the question was, do we replace redevelopment? And the answer to that from local civic folks who were engaged in it said, actually, we don't want to simply put redevelopment back. We want a broader set of authorities, which is why they went with enhancing or improving the infrastructure financing district statute that was already on the books.
Do you have some examples of where this has been implemented successfully?
Yeah, it's being implemented at this stage where cities, and in some cases cities and counties, are doing all the feasibility work to put that together. The city of Luverne is working with the county of Los Angeles to put together a mixed-use housing and transportation project. Now, because this statute is fairly new, the battery of economic development consultants and lawyers and the rest of it are beginning to put the framework together. Once those cities start that process, then we believe that more and more cities and counties in sub-regions, whether it's the San Gabriel Valley or in the South Bay in San Francisco, or for that matter, the southern part of the valley, will see the ease with which these financing authorities can be put together.
Yeah, it's a wide array of projects that you can do with these districts.
Yes.
Besides these, and I don't remember the name here, Enhanced Infrastructure Finance Districts, you need an acronym, something shorter than that. But anyway, in addition to that, any other money coming from any other sources?
Well, there are resources that come from the state through the state's water bond. Mm-hmm. Those resources often require some local match, as you mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's important for these two things to be aligned with both state money and federal money. I'm sorry, state money and local money. The federal government has put less and less resources into infrastructure, and it's hard to know when they'll come to grips with it.
Kind of like it sounds like pulling up yourself by your own bootstraps in many ways. Let me ask you this, though. What does the Economic Summit hope to accomplish when it comes to infrastructure issues?
Well, this next next summit, which will be in December, we're focusing on two issues. One of them is the infrastructure needed for housing. Because these issues are all interrelated, housing is related to jobs are related to housing. Infrastructure supports housing and supports those families that live in those mm-hmm. houses. So we're going to be focusing on how to get more infrastructure related to housing, whether it's water or transportation or waste management.
Yeah, and then there's also workforce development, which is the third
yes.
part of that process.
Right.
I'm going to thank Fred Silva from Cal Ford for joining us. Up next, we're going to talk about the 1 million qualified worker challenge that's part of the Economic Summit. That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. Projections are that California could be short 1 million qualified workers over the next 10 years. How can we avert that economic catastrophe? Our guests have not only been studying the problem, they've been living it. Kathy Martin is the Vice President of Workforce Policy for the California Hospital Association. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And Matt Leger is a Research Analyst with SEIU, UHW, United Health Workers. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, Kathy, let me start with you. Most employers tell you that, you know, their need is really for qualified workers. That's really the problem here. Why is California so short in the number of qualified workers that it needs?
Well, you know, the shortage of skilled workers is really not a California-only problem. It's a nationwide problem. Baby boomers are at retirement age, and they are retiring in great numbers and all at once. For healthcare, this is complicated by the fact that we have nurses and critical health professionals leaving the workforce all at one time, while at the same time we have this increased need for healthcare services because we have this older population
aging
to care
population.
For, we have sicker patients, and then we have the Affordable Care Act, which has expanded coverage, so more people have access.
You're getting hit by double whammies or triple whammies.
Exactly.
Here.
So it's a perfect storm brewing out there where we have the need for skilled workers, yet a scarcity of workers.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting, Matt, you're with a union, Service Employees International Union, a very big union. Why would a union care about workforce development and qualified workers? It would think that would be a management issue.
No, this is an issue for all of California. For us, we think about it when there's a shortage of healthcare workers, it causes delays in access to care. And we know that that can have detrimental effects on our communities. And as it's against our values of healthcare workers to cause those sorts of things. So we know that we need to develop the workforce. On top of that, we know that these are good middle-class jobs, and we have to make sure that there's pathways for people to be able to get those jobs in California.
You know, it's interesting to see the cooperation between management and labor on addressing an issue. And as a labor management arbitrator, I'm happy to see you guys do that. So, Kathy, the Economic Summit is talking about something called a strong workforce program. What specifically is that? How would it work?
Well, the Economic Summit support of a strong workforce program was really instrumental in bringing together education, business, government, and labor so that we could work together on ensuring that California employers have the skilled workforce we need now and in the future so that we can keep California globally competitive from an economic standpoint. Through the Strong Workforce Task Force, leaders throughout California came together to develop recommendations that would move the state forward in terms of career technical education, which is where many of these workers attain their education and their skills. These, as Matt said, these are good jobs, high demand, and good wages. So we want to really make sure that the state has the capacity to provide that education and training, and the summit helps support the efforts of the Strong Workforce Program.
Yeah, and the career technical education, those are really good jobs that can come out of that. And people don't really, I think they need a four-year college degree. Maybe not so much. You can go to a community college, get some great training for a job that pays very well.
Absolutely.
Matt, let me ask you this. Do you think this approach that the Economic Summit has really seems to be a regional approach? Why do you think a regional approach is better than, let's say, a monolithic statewide approach?
Yeah, well, the most important part about the regional approach is because the needs of the Bay Area, Los Angeles, and Fresno are different, and particularly for healthcare workers. In Los Angeles, you need many more bilingual speakers, and in Bay Area, you need different types of workers as well. Fresno, you need much more experience with asthma care. So the regional approach allows you to meet those regional needs and bring together the community, labor organizations, employers, so they can all provide students and local employers for the right skill set.
Do you agree?
Absolutely. And I think that through a regional sector strategy approach, we can really leverage all of the assets in a region in a much more efficient way with diminishing resources for everyone. We need to come together as regions to look at how we can solve some of our workforce problems.
And it's interesting. It seems like you're breaking down some of those silos. Mm-hmm. And it used to be the state is one silo or maybe each local community, but you're saying, no, there's a hybrid here, a regional approach.
Yes.
Because the reality is that problems don't stop at borders, right? I mean, if between cities or between counties, it's usually region-wide.
Right.
We certainly see that in the San Joaquin Valley. Kathy, let me ask you this. You know, you got this 1 million worker goal, a huge goal, in 10 years. What are the short-term goals to reach that long-term goal?
Well, the 1 million goal is not just healthcare, so I think it's important to point that out. That's really, 1 million workers
right.
that
qualified
we need.
Qualified workers, correct.
Qualified workers. But I think for, one of the recommendations that came out of the Strong Workforce Task Force was the need for the community colleges who are providing much of this training and education to be able to respond to industry quickly. And if that means a new program for high-demand occupation needs to be developed, the college needs the ability to put that together quickly. So one of the recommendations was to streamline and shorten the curriculum approval process. And that's important, especially for California hospital members, because when we're a rapidly changing industry and we need programs to come up quickly.
Connecting it to the real world, it
Absolutely.
Sounds like.
So
Matt, let me ask you this. 1 million more qualified workers, how are we going to know if this goal has been achieved?
Well, we need to continue to push for some of the short-term goals, like a streamlined curriculum, like Kathy mentioned, and ensure that we continue to have a system that supports workers through that process and students through that process, because these are really demanding career and training courses. And, if we can't have a system that supports people, then they really won't have the type of workforce we need. And these are good paying jobs, and people want these jobs, but it can be very difficult to overcome all the sort of barriers that are currently in place.
Okay, well, I want to thank Matt Leger with SEIU and Kathy Martin with the Hospital Association for joining us. So where are those workers going to live? Up next, a conversation about California's housing crisis and trying to build 1 million new homes in the next decade. That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report. Welcome back. The nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office has cited housing, particularly along the coast, as a major contributor to income inequality. What can be done to address California's housing crisis? Our guest is Kathy Creswell, a housing policy specialist with Creswell Consulting. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So what are the main issues that are adversely affecting the supply of housing?
Well, there's a lot of things, and it's a very complex, but predominantly we're looking at the supply of housing, both how it is zoned and regulated in terms of whether it's providing a mix of housing for ownership as well as renter households, also the regulation of housing, so local governments can control how much density is provided, the cost through requirements of high parking requirements, also the funding and financing of housing. So we don't have enough resources to actually fund and support affordable development. And then in addition, all of the infrastructure and all the systems needed to help development occur in the right places are also lacking. So we need more infrastructure resources. And then in addition, there is a fundamental lack of support for growth and housing development in particular, which really impacts our ability to get the amount of housing and the affordability of housing we need.
Is this a statewide issue or is this a local issue, you know, specific, let's say, to the coast?
No, it is absolutely a statewide issue. While the problems along our coastline are probably most severe, we have a statewide problem. There isn't a county in California which doesn't have a shortage of affordable housing.
And when you define affordable housing, you're saying we spend more than 30% of your take-home pay basically on housing.
Yes, yes.
That's a chunk of change. I mean, if you add that, you add a car, you add, you know, food, and not
right,
much left
lower
over.
And lower-income households are paying up to 50 and 60% and more of their need. But it's also, we are 12% of the nation's population, and we have 20% of the homeless population. Median incomes are going down at the same time rents and ownership or median value of homes is going up. And even in even in places that are generally considered affordable, for example, Sacramento and Santa Barbara, in both of those places there are only 18 to 19 available and affordable homes for every 100 extremely low-income households who need them. Mm. So it is definitely statewide.
You know, is it also not just, you know, geographic or, you know, in general regions, but also actually where housing is built? Like, is it near jobs or is it near transit? Is that also an issue?
Yes. Really, across the state, we need housing everywhere, but we also need to put housing where it can have both co-benefits. So when we are doing transit-oriented housing along transit corridors, we are reducing commute times, which increases worker productivity. We are reducing climate change, or we are addressing climate objectives. When we build infill, we are addressing potentially the need in rural and in some of the Central Valley areas, the need to less of a need to convert
right.
ag land, right. And also meeting environmental goals. So you're right. And when we do housing right in the right locations, we can have many, many multiple benefits.
Actions are being proposed in this California Economic Summit to meet this 1 million home challenge?
So we're looking at a combination of fiscal and regulatory reforms. So recognizing the need on the fiscal that we need a permanent funding source that would help subsidize housing for that segment of our communities that the market will never be able to meet. Elderly, disabled, chronic homeless. So we need the state to provide a permanent regular funding source. And then we also need to look at incentivizing local governments.
Now, I was going to ask you, is that where kind of the action is a lot with local governments in terms of reducing impact fees, which is a big deal, or regulations?
Absolutely. The most critical decisions about housing supply and affordability happen at the local level. And So we need to help incentivize local governments to make some of the tough choices that they are forced to make when there is a lack of resources, there is a lack of infrastructure. And so we want to look at, for those communities who are trying to do the right thing, providing a mechanism that would enable them to have a greater share of the property tax when they are perhaps making some of the regulatory reforms that we think that are needed to expedite processing, to create more certainty in the processing, and then to actually link real outcomes with those incentives.
It's all connected. I want to thank Kathy Creswell for joining us and the other members of the California Economic Summit. Remember, it's December 13th and 14th in Sacramento.
Up next, a California Economic Summit must address the specific needs of the unique regions of the state. What are the specific economic needs of the Valley that require focus? We'll talk to Fresno Mayor Ashley Swearingen and California Forward co-chair Pete Weber of Fresno.
You're listening to the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition on KMJ.
Leading up to the California Economic Summit event on December 13th and 14th in Sacramento, regional forums have been held around the state to identify economic opportunities and set priorities for state and regional action. What are some of the Valley's economic opportunities and priorities? We've got two regional leaders here to discuss that. Fresno Mayor Ashley Swearingen. Welcome, Mayor Swearingen.
Thank you so much, Mark.
And we have the 2016 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Award winner. I wanted to get that in, Pete. Pete Weber, the director of the Fresno Bridge Academy, who's also the co-chair of California Forward, one of the key organizations behind the California Economic Summit. So welcome to you, Pete, as well.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay, so we'll start with Mayor Swearingen. Why do you think the California Economic Summit is important to the state and, more importantly, to the Valley?
You know, it is, it's incredibly important for a couple of reasons. First of all, we know certainly from our experience here in Fresno in the San Joaquin Valley, it takes so much work and time and diligence and effort to make sure that you're constantly aligning the resources and the infrastructure provided by the public sector in a manner that actually supports business growth, industry growth, and creates the source of jobs that we need to really fuel our local cities and improve our quality of life, certainly here in the Valley and around the state. It's not necessarily something that moves quickly, but these annual meetings are such an important time to get everybody back to the table, assess where we've been for the last year, look forward to what's coming up the next year, what potential opportunities there are to work with the state legislature and the state agencies to really try to bring alignment between the public sector and the private sector to create jobs and improve the economy.
It sounds like an anti-silo approach to problems, breaking
and
down those silos.
Honestly, having been involved in this sort of work now for almost 20 years, most of that obviously here in Fresno in the Valley, but I've certainly enjoyed participating at the state level for the last 5 or 6 years. You know, I can just tell people who may want to join us that it's not necessarily a great time where you're sitting around just kind of kicking back and, you know, laughing it up. It's hard work, but you know what? The people of our Valley, the people of the state, depend on civic leaders, entrepreneurs, private sector leaders, public sector leaders getting together and actually making sure that the wheels of government are turning in a manner that support the economy. And you know what? I'm just grateful for California Forward for getting everybody to the table and requiring this conversation.
You know, you were saying you were doing it for 20 years, so you started this in high school. Wow, that's a long time ago.
Pete,
let me ask you a question. You were a retired Fortune 500 corporate executive, but you've dedicated your time since then trying to solve some of the really complex Valley issues like economic competitiveness. From your perspective, how has the Valley fared when it comes to economic competitiveness? You know, are we leading, following in the pack when it comes to other regions of the state?
Well, Mark, one reason the Economic Summit was created was the recognition that California is not one economy. It's really a tapestry of regional economies. And you can see that as you analyze the recovery from the Great Recession. More than 40% of the jobs created since the recession bottomed out have been created in one region, the Bay Area. The rest of the state is not doing so well. The Valley used to be an outlier with more economic woes than any other region except perhaps the Inland Empire. But we're now more in the mix with most California regions, and frankly, it's not pretty. There's a lot of work to be done. California has the highest rate of poverty in the nation. The percentage of California households earning middle incomes has declined from 60% roughly in the 70s to about 45% today. So the summit aims to reverse these trends. Each region has identified the issues that must be addressed regionally, and we have collectively addressed the issues that require state-level action. And we've made some progress, clearly, but there is just much more to do.
Is this, Pete, I'm just wondering, is this kind of an offshoot of the California Partnership for the San Joaquin Valley that Governor Schwarzenegger initiated back in the early 2000s that you were very involved with?
Yeah, you know, Mark, just like we created the partnership for the San Joaquin Valley to bring together the eight counties in the valley to address regions that had to be addressed in common, the same is true of this larger effort that now involves the entire state. There are 14 different regions represented in this. Each region has a unique set of issues, but collectively, we all have some of the same issues, and those are the issues that we try to advocate for at the state level, while the regions try to do a better job of addressing those issues that they can address locally.
Yeah, the reason why I mention that is it's almost like the California Partnership for the San Joaquin Valley was the pilot program to really initiate now a statewide effort where regions work together as opposed to working just within a city jurisdiction or a county jurisdiction. Regionally, it does make more sense because issues like, say, air quality don't stop at a particular political border. Mayor Swearingen, let me ask you a question about poverty levels. There's a lot of poverty, obviously, here in the Valley and throughout the state, as Pete was mentioning. Worse here in the Valley? And how are we going to address that issue?
Well, it's multiple layers, and it's a lot of hard work. But I think, you know, for us in the Valley, it really requires that every layer of our communities are working together in a manner that targets improving incomes and lowering unemployment. So in Fresno, for example, representing a city agency, which has quite a lot to do with the success or the failure of our city, but we're not entirely in control of all the things that need to happen in order to support higher income jobs and unemployment going down. We know what our job is, though. We have to do our job well, and we have to partner with organizations like the Bridge Academy, which Pete Weber has been involved with that from the very beginning, and really putting together a creative neighborhood-based approach to working with whole families and making sure that all of their barriers to employment and training are being addressed to give them the best chance at employment as possible. We've got a network of programs across certainly the city of Fresno that are aimed at very grassroots neighborhood-level sorts of interventions. And then, of course, as we roll up that sort of work to be a part of the bigger San Joaquin Valley, all of our neighboring jurisdictions have to go about things in a similar manner to ultimately move the needle in the right way for the Valley. And then, of course, the rest of the state. We know at the same time we've got to see our businesses being supported to create more living wage jobs. Cities have absolutely got to be laser focused on what they can do with their resources. They can't waste a dime on things that don't help support those living wage jobs because we're seeing today, you know, some jobs being created in California, actually a good number of jobs at the very, very high end that require a lot of education, experience, and training. And then we're seeing a lot of jobs being created at the very lowest end, very minimum wage, fast food, you know, other sort of very entry-level positions. Right. But the jobs in the middle, those middle-class jobs, we've really seen declining. And so
it's almost like a barbell. It's like a barbell effect.
It is a barbell.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's always two sides of the coin. And, of course, on one side, it's working with people to improve their skills and get them to the next level, whatever that might look like for them, the next level of competitiveness in the workforce. And, you know, in some cases, working with folks who have a lot of barriers to employment, it means a lot of hand-holding, a lot of work to get them to the point where they're in the job market at all. But then folks are obviously in a continuum in their career, but making sure we're working on the human side, the people side, and workforce development. But at the same time, we have to be thinking about business competitiveness and infrastructure and what do we do as communities to support really the expansion of our export-oriented industries that bring more wealth and more jobs to our valley and to the state.
Now, I'm thinking, Mayor Swearingen, when you leave office, I think there's going to be a collective, whew, that was an eight-year experience. There's a lot on your plate for any mayor, for sure. Pete, let me ask you, the California Economic Summit seems to be focusing on three main issues, housing, workforce development, and water. Are these the three most important issues for the Valley?
Let me answer the question this way, Mark. Obviously, when you're trying to address how do you improve the an economy of the size of California, it's a huge undertaking, and so you have to focus on a few things and try to address your efforts into the areas that are going to have the most impact across the state, and that's why the summit has elected to focus on the three issues. There are three primary drivers of poverty in the state of California. First of all, as the mayor said, we don't have enough living wage jobs. The analysis that California Forward has done shows that there is about 1.6 million jobs short. Second, our workforce development has not kept up with the rapidly changing needs of employers in a technology-driven global economy. And third, California has the highest cost of living in the nation because of housing in particular, but also energy and fuel costs. So what we did as a collective group between all the regions is we identified those areas that potentially provided the most bang for the buck. So, for example, housing. If we address the shortage of housing, you are creating jobs, good jobs, at the same time that you are increasing the supply of housing, which puts downward pressure on housing prices. So that's a twofer, right?
Right.
The same is true when you're addressing water infrastructure. Water infrastructure creates jobs at the same time that it addresses a critical issue for the continuing prosperity of the California economy. I mean, without water, we die, and nobody knows that better than we do here in the Valley. Now, both of those issues are very important to the Valley. The third issue is equally important, and is the issue that the mayor referred to earlier, which is, how do you bridge the gap between worker skills and employer requirements? And so we, the summit created three 1 million challenges. First, to 1 million more housing units. Second, 1 million more skilled workers. And the third was 1 million more acre feet of water per year for 10 years, because so much of our economy depends on reliable supply. So that's how we got to those three. It's not the only things that we do. We initially put a fair amount of focus on infrastructure. There are other things that are still awaiting action simply because we don't have enough resources to address all of the issues that need to be addressed.
Yeah, I do like the fact that you're making very numerical, very specific targets. It's not ambiguous. It's very clear. Mayor Swearingen, let me ask you about those housing issues. You've been dealing with those as mayor. From homelessness to affordable housing to drafting a new general plan that kind of guides city growth patterns. There's a lot of talk that housing really isn't a Valley issue, that it's primarily a coastal issue. Is that true, or does the Valley have its own issues when it comes to affordable housing?
We do have our own issues. They look very differently than they do in the coastal part of the state, but we absolutely have housing issues in the Valley. And it's a surprise to many people in Sacramento and around the state to hear, but we actually do have an affordability challenge in this part of the state as well. Our land prices obviously are much lower, our housing costs are lower, but our economy performs at a much lower level as well. And so the income gaps that we see and the percentage of monthly budget that low-income people are spending on rent or their housing costs, for example, is proportionally much higher than it should be. So we definitely have an affordability issue. And then, we have a sprawl issue. I mean, we have seen greenfield development as an economic engine for the San Joaquin Valley up and down the 99 for the last 40 or 50 years. And in fact, that's not what drives our economy. In fact, we just simply take out ag land and other productive uses of that land to provide for something that doesn't actually drive our incomes up and our employment numbers in the right direction. And so we have an affordability issue. And then we have to figure out how to smartly place the additional housing that is needed. And that's where the local coordination and the planning comes in, because while certainly we have a shortage of affordable units, we have tended to oversupply our housing market in the Valley with housing units that end up undermining the very economies of the cities that they're trying to support. So It's a complicated issue here in the Valley. We've certainly moved way down the path on this in Fresno, but still much work to do.
You know, I know we're going to lose you in a little bit, Mayor Swearingen, but I want to ask you before you go, get your take on some of the other issues being addressed at the California Economic Summit on December 13th and 14th in Sacramento, namely that need for infrastructure improvements and a better trained workforce. What do you see as the key Valley challenges in that regard?
You know, I think, for one thing, transportation infrastructure continues to be a significant deficit for us in the Valley. Both our roads that are declining and in disrepair, as well as overcapacity right now. Transit is a major deficit for the Valley. And of course, addressing those two things really comes down to financial resources. And you can't very well ask the taxpayers to provide more funding or to find those dollars somewhere if you don't have a really good and smart plan on how you're going to use that money. So a lot of our infrastructure challenges, particularly transportation, relate to how well are we planning for it? Are we doing the spade work to get ready for significant investments in infrastructure? And that's the way, in fact, that you can usually find the funds, whether the taxpayers have confidence to implement those plans or you're able to secure federal funds or what have you. So it's always a challenge in the Valley to get shovel ready in order to move big things forward. And then educational workforce development, in many cases, it comes down to almost a neighborhood level dealing with education reform and improvements in our local schools, as well as big system issues such as how well is K-12 plugging into community college, plugging into university, and how well does that entire system work to support the area industry. You know what? I see so many things happening right these days that I remain optimistic. But it is exhausting when you think about all the things that really need to be done at the local, the regional, and the state level to move the needle in the right direction. And, you know, I think the Economic Summit is just a great opportunity to kind of press pause on the daily work that so many people are involved with, come together, assess where we are as a state, and then really discipline ourselves to think about what does the next year look like, what does collective action look like, and then we say break, and we run back to our respective communities and continue working for the next year.
Well, I want to thank Mayor Swearingen for joining us. Up next, what is a former Fortune 500 executive's prescription for the Valley's economic challenges? That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
You're listening to the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. On KMJ.
Welcome back. We're talking with former Fortune 500 executive and co-chair of California Forward, Pete Weber, who also, by the way, is the 2016 James Irvine Foundation's Leadership Award winner, about the upcoming California Economic Summit in Sacramento on December 13th and 14th. So, Pete, I mentioned earlier that you were the founder of the and director of the Fresno Bridge Academy. And the focus of that academy is to move people out of poverty. Can you give our listeners some background as to how this became an award-winning program and why is it considered so unique?
Sure, Mark. Let me start with this. Statistics show that if you were a single mother who had a teen pregnancy and dropped out of high school, you are highly likely to live your life on public assistance, lurching from crisis to crisis. Or maybe you have your high school degree but no marketable skills that are fit for employer needs in our rapidly changing global economy and are struggling to make ends meet. The Fresno Bridge Academy was created to help transition people from public assistance to self-reliance, to help people get a job, then a better job, then a career. It's an 18-month program. It offers a comprehensive array of services that include education support, such as getting a GED, vocational training aimed at providing the skills needed to fill jobs that are available in the local economy today, job placement assistance. But it does more than that. What makes it unique is it provides life skills for adults to eliminate any and all barriers to sustained employment. And, you know, things like parenting skills, how to manage household budgets, English language skills, digital skills, the list goes on and on. And the Bridge Academy works with children and the family to help them read and do math at grade level, get exposure to the arts, and show up for school. It's a two-generation model. And we do this very cost effectively. So for every taxpayer dollar spent on the program, we return $5.50 to the taxpayer. There's just no other program like it in the country, and it's had very positive reviews from state and federal folks.
You know, it harkens back, I think I was telling you earlier, to my days as a graduate student when I was working with a labor economics professor studying the old CETA program, Comprehensive Employment and Training Act, back in the late 70s and 80s, and that was kind of focused on really kind of training people up for government jobs. This is very different. This is training people for quote-unquote real jobs in the private sector. So it's evolved a lot since I was in graduate school, for sure. By the way, you know, I hear from, you know, private employers all the time about this, the need for qualified workers. They say, you know, the jobs are there. We just don't have people who can do them. You know, is that a particular problem in the Valley? And I know the summit's talking about this thing called a strong workforce program. Does that concept have any value here in the Valley?
Absolutely. So first, let me say the lack of skilled workers is not just a Valley problem. It's not just a California problem. It's a national problem. Baby boomers are retiring, taking away, you know, lifetime skills. Technology has changed our economy and continues to change it every day. And we're just not developed a fast enough system, a nimble enough system to keep up with how we train and educate people. So the summit did help drive the development of something called the Strong Workforce Program. And in support of that, the legislature and the governor funded an additional $200 million in career technical education funding that is going to drive more regional collaboration with our community colleges and employers to prepare the workforce. Now, it's now up to us in the Valley to make good use of that money by connecting employers to our CTE programs, our community colleges and universities. We're doing a really good job of that in Fresno. In fact, Mark, I would encourage you to produce a show with Mike Betts, who chairs the Central Valley Manufacturing Industry Cluster, Chancellor Paul Parnell of our State Center Community College District, Fresno Unified Superintendent Mike Hansen, and Fresno State President Joe Castro.
I think you just did, Pete. I think you just created a new show for us, but thank you for that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because, you know, look, I think your listeners would get a really good idea of how we are now integrating the needs of employers with our education institutions, and you're going to see a big difference going forward.
You know, it's interesting. You know, Long Beach had this model several years ago where they literally from K through, you know, college have a pathway. So there are students, as they're going through high school, they're getting ready for whether it's graduation from high school and then community college and then on transitioning on to a four-year college, which has been very, very successful. It sounds like they're doing a lot of that here in Central California.
Yeah, in fact, Mike, it's called the Long Beach Promise.
Right.
And we are in the process of creating the Fresno Promise. And it's we're plagiarizing with the complete support of Long Beach,
you know,
Eloy Oakley, who started that program as the superintendent or chancellor for the Long Beach Community College, now runs the state community college program. He, by the way, sits on the board of California Forward, and so he is very supportive of what we're doing here in the Valley.
You know, Pete, I have to correct you. That you're not plagiarizing. You know, when students copy someone else's work, that's plagiarizing. But when professors or executives do it, that's called research. So you're doing research. I'm not plagiarizing.
There you go. We're replicating.
There you go. I mean, best practices. I mean, that's what you do, right? You don't need to reinvent the wheel. You need to make the wheel better or make it applicable to where you are. So let me ask you this, Pete. You know, we were talking about infrastructure needs a little earlier. The California Economic Summit is focusing on those things. Again, it's in Sacramento on December 13th and 14th. You know, they're talking about something called an Enhanced Infrastructure Financing District. Is that something, an idea that could work for the Valley? It sounds kind of a little bit like, you know, RDAs, you know, redevelopment agencies 2.0. Is that something that could work here in the Valley?
Well, it sort of is. It's intended to, at least in part, take over the role that RDAs were playing. But before I go there, let me just say that we have been working through the summit on critical infrastructure issues for the state. And, of course, for us here in the Valley, the most critical infrastructure issue is water. And there's a state component and a regional component to the solution. The state has to address the backbone system, meaning storage and conveyance and so on. But the summit has chosen to address the regional component, things that we can do at the local level to increase our self-reliance and reduce dependence on the Delta. And there's a lot going on at the local level. LA, for example, is investing in the biggest recycling project in U.S. history. There's great work going on in Santa Ana to integrate water systems for increased water efficiencies. Here in Fresno, the investment the city is making in new water infrastructure will ensure water security for the city of Fresno for at least the next half century. Clearly, there's a lot more that needs to be done.
I'm sorry for interrupting, but you also see those what's called the Purple Pipes projects. You see them in Clovis, for example, where they're using recycled water for medians and for parks. I mean, why use, you know, water, drinking water, when you can use recycled water for those things?
Yeah. So you know, that's part of what we hope to be using enhanced infrastructure financing districts for, not just water, but also transportation infrastructure. The concept of enhanced infrastructure districts, which was created through the summit, is just kind of getting into implementation mode. There's about 30 projects in the LA area that are looking at using that enhanced infrastructure financing district model. It's a little complicated to explain here, but it's a very effective way of getting a local investment that helps bring together organizations. Like there's a project in L.A. that in the city of LaBorne, the county of L.A., and a private university are using an EIFD, Enhanced Infrastructure Financing District, for a downtown multi-use project of residential and commercial uses that also includes a light rail station. So is there an opportunity for us in the Valley? Absolutely. We need to move down that learning curve faster than we are right now, but we will be using that. And as you say, it's kind of a substitute for the redevelopment.
The old RDAs. You know, it's funny, when I was starting to read up on these enhanced infrastructure financing districts, I said, this has got Pete Weber's fingerprints all over it. It's an old finance guy figuring out a new way to get to point B. You know, before we end up here, we've only got about 30 seconds left. I want to see if there's anything else you think our listeners ought to know about the Economic Summit and how you hope it might potentially impact their lives in a positive manner.
Let me just make a quick comment about Mayor Swearingen's observations on housing and in the Valley. Actually, housing is a problem throughout the state of California. 57 of the 58 counties in California housing cost burden, which means that families are having to use more than one-third of their net take-home pay for rent. Big issue, needs to be addressed, major focus of the summit.
Okay, well, I want to thank Pete Weber, the co-chair of California Forward and director of the Fresno Bridge Academy, and Fresno Mayor Ashley Swearingen for joining us. The views and opinions expressed in the Matty Report are those of the individuals participating in the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the California Channel or the Matty Institute. If you'd like to share your thoughts about the points and opinions expressed in the Matty Report, visit our website at mattyinstitute.org.
The Matty Report, Valley Views Edition, is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio, Cumulus Media, and the nonpartisan Matty Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on politics and important public policy issues. This is KMJ.